All right. Have you guys ever heard of a guy in the Bible named Benaiah? Yeah? Okay, maybe a couple of you have heard it. I know I had read about this guy before, but have you guys ever been reading your Bible and you get to a verse and you're like, I know I've read this before, but I don't remember ever reading it. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Anybody else? Okay. Well, it happened to me with this guy named Benaiah, okay? Really crazy, cool guy. And check out this story about Benaiah. It's you can write it down if you want to read about it. One verse long, 2 Samuel 23:20. Check out what it says about this guy. Benaiah was the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man from Kabzeel, who had done many deeds. He had killed two lion-like heroes of Moab. Now here's the killer part. You ready for this? He had also gone down and killed a lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. How sweet is that? Okay, just picture this guy. I've never heard of this. I don't remember ever hearing about this guy named Benaiah. But check out what he does. He fights a lion in a pit while it's snowing. I think that's pretty sweet. Anybody else? I mean, that's like an epic battle, right? I don't know why he's fighting the lion, but it just so happens that they're in a pit while it's snowing. That's pretty amazing. I would pay money to see video of this. I don't know about you guys, but I would watch it so many times if I could. But this guy is just one example of how the Bible is filled with these crazy, cool stories that have happened in the past. Lots of cool stuff. Unfortunately, like I mentioned, we don't have video of this guy Benaiah fighting the lion in the pit on a snowy day. But we do happen to have some video of some other interesting Bible stories. How many of you, what are some of your favorite Bible stories that you've read before? What's one? Balaam and the donkey. Very good. David and Goliath. What else? What are some of your favorite ones? Daniel and the lion's den? Yeah, yeah. Queen Esther. Jesus and the cross, of course. Anybody else? Jacob and his brothers. Okay, all kinds of cool stuff, right? There's lots of cool stories in the Bible. Well, we happen to have actual footage from a few of these things. Pretty amazing. I guess some really high-tech technology, but we're going to show you some footage from the actual David and Goliath fight. You guys ready for this? Check it out.
David and Goliath.
Actual footage. Now, be careful. It gets a little graphic here. I think his head just got cut off. Okay, there you go. David and Goliath. Do you guys know the story of Elijah with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel? Do you know what I'm talking about? And they cried out to their God to burn up the sacrifice. Nothing happened. Elijah cried out to God, and you'll see what happened. Here we go.
Elijah and the prophets of Baal.
Okay, how about the story of Samson? You guys know Samson? Really, really, you know, muscular guy like me, right? And why'd you guys laugh? So Samson was one of the judges of Israel, right? And you remember he was really big, muscular guy. Check out his story. Here we go.
Samson.
There you go. That's the story of Samson. How about, somebody mentioned Balaam and the talking donkey. This is one of my favorites. Here we go.
Balaam's donkey.
Huh?
Oh, man, that's awesome. We also have video footage of our story today from Joshua chapter 6, the Battle of Jericho. Here we go. Last shot.
Jericho.
There you go. The walls came tumbling down. Very nice. Well, funny thing is, behind all of those crazy little videos is truth. And every one of those stories and so many more in the Bible have actually happened. In fact, many of them, most of them are backed up by history, by archaeology even. In fact, 18 years ago, the year 1990, before you guys were born, Time Magazine put out an article called Score One for the Bible. And basically, if you know anything about Time Magazine, they're not a really what we would call Christian-friendly magazine. They don't really like Christianity too much. And so for them to publish an article talking about what they talked about was pretty amazing. Basically, this article called Score One for the Bible admitted that recent archaeological findings were consistent with the biblical account of the story of Jericho that we're going to read this morning. Time Magazine said that, and for them to say that, that's a pretty big deal. Today, we're going to look at three reasons why you don't want to be God's enemy. We're going to look at three reasons in Joshua 6. If you haven't turned there already, go ahead and do so. But not only today will you be discouraged to resist God, but you'll be encouraged to take a stand for God. Now, before we get to Joshua 6, let's get some background here so we're all on the same page. If you guys were here last week, most of you were, we crossed the Jordan River with the nation of Israel. You may remember it's about 100 feet wide, so it's from the back wall of the plex to the beginning of the volleyball court, okay? Pretty wide river, and it's about 10 feet deep, so if you guys were in the Jordan River right now, you'd be drowning, all right? 8 feet above, 50 feet on either side, big river, and hundreds of thousands of people had to get across this river. So God stopped the flow of the water, they crossed. They set up a memorial on the other side to remember the miracle of God stopping the water and them crossing. Well, they went about 5 miles from the river. They set up camp in a region known as Gilgal, and that's where we meet up with them today. They're about 5 miles from the river. They're only about 2 miles from the city of Jericho that we're going to learn more about today. Just to get the city of Jericho and that distance in your mind, if you guys got on Osuna, drove up Osuna, went under the freeway and got onto San Mateo, do you guys know where the Dollar Theater is across from Sonic? Okay, that is exactly 2 miles from Calvary. Okay, so that's kind of how close of a distance they were camped from Jericho. So it would take maybe, 45 minutes to walk over there, an hour to walk over there. And that's about how close these people were. So they were camped pretty close, and they had just crossed the Jordan River, but that was just the beginning for them, because the first thing on their list in the Promised Land was to conquer the city of Jericho, and that's a pretty big thing. In fact, we've probably all heard of the walls of Jericho, right? And that's actually a pretty accurate description, because Jericho had two strong, thick walls. We're going to put a picture on the screen for you so you can get an idea. But basically, when an enemy would try to attack Jericho, they'd have three things to get past. Okay, let me explain this to you. First off, down here, we have the guys marching. This is where they would be marching around the city. Right here, they have a 15-foot retaining wall, about 6 feet wide. 6 feet thick, okay? So picture 15 feet is the plex and a little bit higher, okay? Okay, that's a pretty big wall that they would come up against. But it didn't stop there. That was just the retaining wall. On top of that was another 25-foot wall that was 6 feet thick. So from ground level to the top of that first wall was about 40 feet, four stories of this mud brick and stone wall, 6 feet thick. Okay, now 6 feet would be from the back wall of the plex to about here. This is how wide this wall was, okay? Now, our walls are made of like half inch of sheetrock, okay? And some insulation and some 2x4s on the inside. Our walls are nothing compared to these walls. 40 feet tall, 6 feet thick, okay? That's a big wall. So then if by chance somebody's attacking and they were able to make it up over that wall, I don't know how they would, but if they did, they'd have a big climb going up right here. This hill is about a 35-degree angle, so a pretty good climb. And a lot of times it would be covered with plaster, so it'd make it really slippery and hard to climb up. Now, let's say they got over the wall and up the hill. That wasn't the end, because they still had another wall at the top that was similar to the wall below it. It was another 25 feet tall, 6 feet thick. And the bottom of that wall was about 46 feet off the ground. So the top of the top wall was about 70 feet from ground level where they would have been marching. Are you picturing it here? This was impossible to get into. This city was literally impenetrable. Nobody could really get into this. Now, estimates say that there were about 2,000 to 3,000 people that were in the city of Jericho when it was attacked. Now, maybe you're thinking, okay, 2,000 to 3,000. That's not very many compared to how many people were in the nation of Israel. You know, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people crossed the Jordan River. So aren't the people that live in Jericho like totally outnumbered? Yeah, they are. They're completely outnumbered. But who cares if you can't get to them, right? I mean, they win if you can't get to them. They're locked inside that city. Nobody is going to be able to get in. Just like we talked about, if you got past that first wall, you got to climb up that hill. If you get past that hill, you still have another wall to climb. Meanwhile, people are up on top of the wall, probably throwing stuff at you, shooting arrows, dropping big rocks off the top. I mean, you stand very little chance of surviving all of these walls and hills and all of this stuff. Very well fortified city. In fact, one guy said this: nothing but a direct interference of the Almighty could in a week's time give a city like Jericho to attackers like Joshua and the Israelites. In other words, for God's people to conquer this city, God had to do it. There was no other way. There was no way that these people who had everything with them and lived in tents could attack a city like this. There's no way. God had to do it. So let's take a look, Joshua chapter 6, at how it all went down. Literally, verse 1. Now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go all around the city once. This you shall do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. It shall come to pass when you make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout, then the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up every man straight before him." If you're filling in the blanks on your bulletin, number one, God's attack methods are unpredictable. God's attack methods are unpredictable. Now, you never want to be God's enemy. And here's the first reason: because you don't know what God's going to pull. God is completely unpredictable all the time. Only he knows what's ahead. Only he can predict the future in reality. And an attack is always much easier to defend yourself from if you know it's coming, right? I mean, that's the whole thing with like somebody who breaks into your house. You didn't know they were coming. That's why it worked. I mean, imagine if you're at home later on today. You hear a knock on your front door. You open the door up. It's a guy in a ski mask. Yeah, can I help you? Oh, yeah, I was going to be robbing your house later on tonight, maybe around 6:30. Does that time work for you? You're like, 6:30. Yeah, that'll be perfect. My whole family will be gone. We'll leave the house open for you, right? No, you're not going to say that. You're going to be like, you're robbing my... Hold on, I need to make a phone call real quick, right? Right? You're not going to let him get away with that. If you know when it's coming, you'll have the police there, or you'll have a big bat, right? Or like a really angry dog of some sort, you know? Something, you're going to be able to defend yourself because you knew it was coming. I read about a guy in New Zealand, full-grown adult, attacked a 15-year-old boy. I don't know what the kid did to deserve this, but he attacked him by picking up a hedgehog, okay? Here's a picture of a hedgehog, and throwing it at him. Now, as you can tell from the picture, a hedgehog is not the softest animal, okay? Now, it would be one thing if he, like, threw a kitten at him. Meow, oh, you know, it's all soft. Oh, that's nice. But this is a hedgehog. The guy ended up with puncture wounds in his legs. Bummer. I'll bet he could have defended himself a little bit better had he known, when I go out today, a full-grown man will throw a hedgehog at my leg. Probably would have protected himself, worn some shin guards, right? He could have defended himself a lot better if he knew the attack was coming. I wonder if it were up to Joshua how he would have defeated the city of Jericho. I wonder what he would have done. Maybe surround the city, cut off the water supply and the food supply. We know that they did that. For this week at least, verse 1, we read it. It was shut up completely. Nobody came in or out. Maybe he would have just had the whole camp of Israel rush at the city and try to climb the walls and hope that enough people survived to take over the city. Maybe he would have just stood out there with the whole nation of Israel and told Yo Mama jokes until the people inside got tired of it. Like, we love our mommies. Okay, we surrender, right? I don't know what his plan would have been, but I'm sure that marching and yelling were not in his plans. But they were in God's. And God lays out the plan here. We just read it. Day 1 through 6, the first 6 days, God says, get up, march to Jericho. It's about 2 miles away. So picture yourself marching up Osuna, down San Mateo to the Dollar Theater. All right? You're marching. Marching. All right? All together for 2 miles. You get to the city, you take a lap around the Dollar Theater, all right? Around Jericho. But you can't say a word the whole time. Take a lap, the priests are blowing the trumpets, and then you march back 2 miles. That's all it was. 4.5 miles for 6 days. That's all that God told them to do, all right? So that's what they were supposed to do. Walk around once, walk the 2 miles back. They were basically... In order, they had a whole set of armed men, guys with swords and shields and spears. Right behind them came the priests blowing the trumpets. Behind them was the Ark of the Covenant. You remember that? The priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant, that was where the high priest met the presence of God in the tabernacle in this big thing. The Ark of the Covenant, behind that was rear guards. So in the front and the back, they were guarded by men with swords and spears and shields. They were supposed to be in complete silence, not say a single word. The only sound that would be coming from this group of men were the 7 priests blowing the 7 ram's horns, okay? Now, I brought a ram's horn this morning to show you what this would have been like. This is what it looked like. Can you picture this? I'm glad I don't have... a horn. Unfortunately, I'm not skilled enough to blow this thing, but I did bring a recording of what it would have sounded like. So check this out. There you go. Very nice. Now that clip was 15 seconds. Imagine hearing that for 20 minutes straight as you marched around a city, times 7. There's 7 trumpets, 7 priests blowing them. 20 minutes straight, that's the only sound you hear coming from your group. Okay, so that's what they dealt with for 6 days straight. They did this. Now, I don't know about you guys, but as a Christian sometimes, I feel outnumbered. I feel a little overpowered. I feel like the enemy is winning sometimes. Especially in a public school. It's a hard setting to be a Christian in a public school. I know I've been there. And sometimes we feel that way. But I want you guys to rest assured that the enemies of God will get what they have coming. And we have no reason to fear. And that's just one great reason to realize that you never want to be God's enemy. He has tricks up his sleeve that you never even have dreamed up. And his attack methods are unpredictable. Here's number two. God's obedient people are undefeatable. God's obedient people are undefeatable. Have you ever wondered what God's will is for your life? I know I've wondered it before. I've had people ask me, Kevin, you're a pastor. What's God's will for your life? I think we could sum it up in one word. You ready for this? You could write this down. God's will for my life is, one word, obedience. It's that simple. Obedience. God's will for your life is that you would live in complete obedience to Him. It's literally the best possible way you could live your life. Complete obedience. When you're obedient, as God's people, when we obey God, we are a wicked weapon in His hand. Look at verse 8. So it was when Joshua had spoken to the people that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets. And the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed them. The armed men went before the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came after the Ark, while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, "You shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout, then you shall shout." So he had the Ark of the Lord circle the city, going around it once. Then they came into the camp and lodged in the camp. And Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the Ark of the Lord. Then seven priests, bearing seven trumpets of ram's horns, before the Ark of the Lord, went on continually and blew with the trumpets. And the armed men went before them, but the rear guard came after the Ark of the Lord, while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. So they did 6 days. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I was growing up, I used to always get in trouble for asking why. I don't know about you guys. I'm sure none of you guys do, but I did. And when I was growing up, I would always want to ask why, you know? And it would be about everything. I always wanted to know why my parents were telling me to do that. Kevin, hey, can you take out the trash? Why? You know what I mean? Right? Kevin, brush your teeth. Why? Because your breath smells terrible. Either brush your teeth or quit breathing, right? So I brushed my teeth because I didn't want to stop breathing. Kevin, take a shower. Why? Kevin, quit burning things. Why? You know, right? I always was asking why. I had to know why they were telling me to do it. You know, one thing I find interesting about this account of Jericho is the lack of questions. We don't read about any questioning. When God says to do something, they do it immediately. I mean, think about it. Joshua is this commander, right? When God tells him to do this, surely you would think there would be some type of questioning. Joshua's like, "God, I'm all about following you, marching. You know, I'm a soldier. I'm all about that. But shouldn't we, like, I don't know, lob a bomb in there or something? I mean, is marching and yelling really going to accomplish your goal here?" You would think that he would be asking a question somewhere, right? And then but there's no questions. And then as Joshua passes this on to the priests and the soldiers, you would think they would question Joshua. Like, "Hey, Joshua, sure you know what you're talking about? I mean, we're soldiers and we're trained and we can attack. Like, you don't have to just try to figure out some fancy fairy tale way for us to knock down the walls. I don't think marching and shouting is going to do it, you know? I mean, screaming is what middle schoolers do. I don't think that they can knock down walls, though, right?" Maybe you would have thought there would have been a question there, right? Well, they've seen God's work. Every day they go back to camp in Gilgal, and you remember what's set up there, the memorial. Do you remember that? What was the memorial after they crossed through the Jordan River? Do you remember? Right? It helped them to remember the miracle, right? And do you remember what it was? It was 12 stones. Remember, they pulled them out of the middle of the Jordan River, carried them on their shoulders, stacked them up so that they would remember when they saw that. I remember those rocks used to be in the middle of the Jordan River. God did that. So every day they had this reminder. When you obey God, let me give you this awesome fact. You are undefeatable. Now, before you get ideas like, I'm undefeatable. All right. Feeling pretty good about this. Before you get any ideas, you're like, you walk out on the freeway, stand in front of a semi. I'm undefeatable. You're wrong. You're going to be defeated very quickly. And unfortunately, I'm going to get a call. Excuse me, one of your students, they have their brains spread out all over the asphalt out here. Come clean them up. No thanks, right? Don't stand out there. That's not being obedient to God. But when God tells you to do something, you better jump on it. And when you do it, no matter how hard it is, you are undefeatable. You have God on your side. Romans 8:37, you know what it says? We are more than conquerors through him who loves us. 1 John 4:4 says that he who is in us is greater than he who is in the world. If we will be obedient to the Lord, we have nothing to fear. So the Israelites obeyed, and look at what God did. Verse 15, but it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early. Now think about it. This is the day. They're like, oh man, oh man. We've been marching for 6 days. Today's the day. We get the city today. It says they woke up early. About the dawning of the day. So the sun is still coming up. They're drinking their Starbucks and they're getting ready to go. They marched around the city 7 times in the same manner. On that day only, they marched around the city 7 times. And the 7th time it happened, when the priests blew the trumpets, that Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. And then he says, now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction. It and all who are in it, only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. Here we go, verse 20. So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets. And it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet and the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat. Then the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. Now, believe it or not, we actually have a picture from the scene of when the walls crumbled. You guys ready to see this? Now, I have to warn you, though, before we do it, it's a little graphic. There's some body parts. Do you guys want to see it still? Yeah! Okay, here we go. Here it is. There it is. Those walls came tumbling out. Look at that. There's arms. There's heads. Just a gruesome scene, right? Look at that guy right in the middle, standing on the top of that stone. He's like got that scowl on his face. Do you see him? Look how angry he looks, this guy. Arr. You know, he's pretty upset. But imagine, for real, this was a killer defeat. Something nobody could have ever predicted. And that's the way God rolls. Unpredictable, undefeatable, that's the God that I serve. That's the God that every one of us has the invitation to serve. It's free. God offers that forgiveness and grace for free. We don't have to earn it. Unfortunately, even though it's free, a lot of people still reject God, and that's where number three comes in. God's punishment is unimaginable. Sometimes people just deserve what they get, right? I read about 3 guys in the Netherlands. They decided it would be smart if they went running down the streets of the Netherlands mooning people, okay? Bad idea. Well, They take off running. It says this about one guy. Then I was reading the article. Then one pushed his behind against the window of a restaurant. That would ruin your appetite, right? I mean, you're eating a French fry. Oh man, it's terrible, right? Well, here's the best part, my favorite part. You ready? The window broke, resulting in deep wounds to his derriere, or his posterior, or his behind, or his buttocks, or whatever you want to call it, that needed hospital attention. The guy had to go to the hospital for mooning people through glass at a restaurant. That's what he gets, that sicko. I hope he learned his lesson, right? That's an unimaginable punishment. He did not wake up that morning thinking he was going to the hospital for something like that, right? He would have never thought of that. I wonder, though, what's happening in Jericho the day that the walls fell. Think about these guys, okay? The whole city by now surely had heard about the army marching around their city. They'd been going for 6 days now. Today's the seventh. A small crowd probably gathers up on the walls as they begin to watch. And they probably all, you know, I wonder if Israel probably arrived about the same time each day, took one lap, headed home for the day. And so every day about the same time, the crowd gathers. They probably make fun of them. They're up there on top of the wall, throwing stuff down on them. But this day, something different happens. They get up there, and they hit one lap, and everybody's like, all right, man, there's, you know, better head back to work. Oh, wait a minute. They're still marching. What are they doing? Okay, lap number two, right? So like, sweet, we'll just hang out, watch one more. They come back around, lap number three, number four, number five. They're like, what is going on here? How many times are they going to march around our city? What are these crazy people doing? I can just picture them up on the wall. You remember, these walls are 6 feet thick. Easily, people could have hung out there, thrown out a blanket, had a family picnic, watching these people circle their city, throwing stuff at them, you know, yelling insults at them. People up on the wall, I'm sure that's how it was. But it didn't just stop, the weirdness didn't just stop at them continuing to circle, because one new thing happened. As they were watching for the whole week, they remember only all they ever heard was the sound of these trumpets. They never talked, they never yelled, nothing ever happened until today. And after they made it 7 times around, they're looking down and they're like, oh, they stopped. What's going on down there? The trumpets stop. And then they hear, remember, they're 7 stories up, probably pretty hard to hear, but they hear the commander. You can tell he's the commander. He's in the front of the army, and he starts yelling something to all these guys, and they're getting all excited. And they're like, man, these people are crazy. What are they doing, you know? I can just imagine staring down at them. And all the crowds, just picture yourself, you're on the top of the wall of Jericho, looking down. You're like, what are these people doing? And you hear him start, you hear him yell, and all of a sudden the priests lift up their trumpets and they start blowing. Something new happens. Every man down there that you can tell begins screaming at the top of his lungs, like a middle school girl, okay? And they're screaming. And you're like, what are these guys thinking? You know, you're standing there on the top of the wall of Jericho with halfway through your sentence. As you're looking down, a crack forms in the wall, shoots between your legs. You're like, what in the world? All of a sudden, the very wall you're standing on begins to crumble and crack, and you're falling 7 stories down to your death. Hundreds of people, probably just from the walls crumbling, died. Just from that. As they fell 7 stories after watching these men walk around their city. By the end of the day, almost every person in the city of Jericho would be dead. Look at verse 21. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. Verse 24. But they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. Every person, young and old, every animal was slaughtered. And suddenly from a distance, miles, maybe 100 miles, I'll bet you could see this. Villages and cities all around begin to notice, hey, what's that big cloud of smoke? It's like coming from the direction of Jericho. I wonder what's going on over there. Cities all around begin to see this huge cloud of smoke filling the air as the city is completely annihilated. I wonder too, the Israelites, remember, they're camped only about 2 miles away. I wonder if they felt the ground shake as these huge stone walls crashed to the ground. I wonder what it must have been like. Interestingly enough, over 3,000 years later, the year 1950, it'd be about the third or fourth time that archaeologists had been to the old site, the old city of Jerusalem. 1950, they began digging and they found a complete layer, a few inches deep, of soot and ashes from where the city had been burned. Everything had been burned. Huge citywide fire, they could tell, had happened in this city. It was a day of tears, and pain, fire, and unimaginable punishment. Sounds pretty similar to a place Jesus talked about quite often. We know it as hell. Pain, unquenchable fire, eternal, unimaginable punishment. And that's the future for all of God's enemies. And I hope you guys can just get a little glimpse of why you would never want to be God's enemy. Now, of course, if we're all honest, we would say, you know, none of us would want to call ourselves enemies of God. Of course we wouldn't say that, but here's the deal. If you're not living for God, you're rejecting God, and you have made yourself into an enemy of God. And this is what happens to God's enemies. So I got to thinking, reading about Joshua, fascinated by this story. And I got to thinking, I wonder if this method of blowing the horn and screaming can still knock down walls today. You know? I started wondering. I wonder if Velocity students could knock down walls. I don't know. So I figured I'd give you guys a chance to try. You guys ready for this? Okay, here's what we're going to do. In just a moment, we're going to blast the ram's horn. Okay, clear your throat if you need to. Get ready because you're going to scream at the top of your lungs. Okay, now I'm going to be Joshua and I'm going to tell you right now, here's your command. When you hear the sound of the trumpet, you're going to shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Okay, now here's the deal. I'm laying my job on the line for you guys here. Okay, because if you guys really knock down the walls of the Plex, I probably won't be working here very much longer, okay? So, but I'm willing to risk it just to see if this is going to work. You guys ready for this? I think you guys can do this. Okay, so when you guys hear the trumpet, you shout, for the city is yours. Here we go. Ready? Come on. Shout. Come on. Come on. Okay. I don't see any. Okay, good. Well, I guess I still work here, so that's good. Good screaming. I can't hear you, so if you say my name later on and I don't answer, it's your fault. But good screaming. Good job. Here's the deal. Despite what God did, I mean, that was pretty miraculous. Can you imagine, though? Seriously, if the trumpet would have blasted, you would have screamed and the walls would have really come down. You guys would have freaked out, right? I would have freaked out. Like, it wasn't supposed to really happen, you know? I would have freaked out. Everybody would have. I didn't think I could really do it, you know? But think about it. Remember, we talked about how thin our walls are compared to Jericho's? Half inch, you know, sheetrock and some insulation and some 2x4s. They had 6 feet of mud, brick, and stones. And just by yelling and being obedient to God, God caused this miracle to happen. The walls fell down flat. Now, here's the thing. Unfortunately, this story has a sad twist. 25 years later, by the end of the book of Joshua, the nation of Israel would have turned their backs on God. Here he did these incredible things for them. He provided for them. He stopped the flow of the Jordan River. He defeated the city of Jericho for them. And yet 25 years later, they will have turned their backs on him. Now, before we think too low of them, I want to challenge you guys with a statistic here. And I hope you guys, I pray honestly that you guys are the ones who change this statistic. But I hope it gets your attention. Here's what I need. I need the back three rows right here to stand up right where you're at. Back three rows. Statistically, in this room right here, those three rows are the only people left out of all of you who will, by the time they reach college, still be serving the Lord. Out of everyone in here who says that they're a Christian, 81% represented by all of you who are still sitting down, by the time you reach college, just a few years away, will have rejected Jesus Christ. Turn your back on him and be living for yourself. All of you sitting down is what is that statistic. Isn't that shocking? You guys can grab a seat. Thank you. But here's the deal. None of us want to be a part of that statistic. And so the great thing about it is you guys have a chance at changing that statistic. 4 years, 5, 6, 7, 8, when you reach college. And wherever we're at, I hope to open a magazine one day and see an article written by somebody who says, the dropout in Christianity has severely decreased. We don't know what it's been. But the statistic that used to be at 81% of students rejecting Jesus Christ has severely decreased. The great thing is you guys have a chance at changing that statistic. It can completely change if you guys will commit to living your life for Jesus. I hope you guys see today the danger of being an enemy of God. But you know, it's unfortunate a lot of people live their relationship with God like those people in the city of Jericho. They put up walls around them and they don't let God in. They feel pretty protected. Life is going pretty good for them. They're very successful. Maybe you can think, maybe you're one of those people. And you've allowed those walls to be put up. Let God in. Let God take down those walls. Let him take control of your life. Stop doing whatever it is that you're doing, because God is always more important, and he has a plan for you. Let's pray. God, we just thank you that you are the miracle-working God, that you love us, that you have a plan for us, and the God that knocks down the walls of Jericho and parts the Red Sea is the God that we trust and want to live for today. Lord, I pray that these students in this room would be a huge contribution to changing that statistic. And as they reach college, Lord, every student in this room would be going strong and hard for you. Lord, keep them from temptation, I pray. I pray that they would not be like these people in Jericho who put up these walls and felt pretty secure by themselves. They didn't need God. Lord, I pray that every one of us would surrender to you and choose today whom we're going to serve. In your name we pray. Amen.